Welcome to Private Equity Perspectives, a podcast by BDO USA's private equity practice. Each episode, BDO connects with leaders in the private equity space to discuss the latest trends driving deal activity, fund strategies, and portfolio company optimization.
Hello, and welcome to BDO's Private Equity Perspectives podcast, where we explore the trends impacting private equity today. I'm Todd Kinney, National Relationship Director in BDO's Private Equity Practice, and I'm based here in New York City. For this episode, I'm thrilled to be joined by two good friends and clients of the firm, Ben Krause, who's a partner in North American Infrastructure at 3i Group, and Drew Myers, partner at Seaport Capital. Today, we'll explore the different challenges and opportunities posed by both Drew and Ben's respective industries, how they've addressed them, and how they're gearing up for what's to come in 2025. We'll also discuss which operational improvements and value creation initiatives they place an emphasis on, and a whole lot more. Just a quick reminder to our listeners that the remarks and opinions of our guests do not necessarily represent BDO's views. So with all that out of the way, Ben, let's start with you. As a partner of North American Infrastructure 3i Group, perhaps you can tell our listeners a bit about yourself, your firm, explain your role, and maybe tell us a little bit about what 3i looks for when making investments. I know you guys are focused on infrastructure, but anything else you can share about the types of companies you focus on would be great.
Yeah, absolutely, Todd. Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to join you and Drew. Obviously, BDO has been a great relationship for us, so we cherish the opportunity to be able to chat through some of these points. 3i is a middle market infrastructure and private equity investor. We've got around $40 billion of assets under management across North America and Europe. 3i is a little bit different. We were founded in 1945 after World War II to help fund the rebuilding of the UK. So the firm has been around for quite a while. I'm a partner on the North American infrastructure team where we focus on value add infrastructure investments. We've got a team in London that focuses on the European market. I focus on North America, but we work pretty closely together on both new investment ideas as well as asset management strategies. It's pretty interesting to see kind of the similarities and the difference between the European and the North American market. And there's trends we see here first and there's trends we see there, but there's a lot of good cross-pollination of ideas between our two teams. I've been an investor in infrastructure for over 16 years, and I've seen the asset class change pretty significantly over that time. We've moved well beyond toll roads and fully contracted power plants. And you know, that's really what we're able to take advantage of, kind of the historic knowledge of seeing that transition, you know, now that we focus on value add. At 3i in North America, we manage five platforms. So one business develops, owns, and builds cell towers. We have a platform that owns short line rail, which is freight railroad, first mile, last mile. And then we have two environmental services companies. And finally, we have a company that focuses on long-term airport concessions. As a value-add infrastructure investor, all of our companies have to provide a clear essential services through difficult to replicate physical assets. So we really, you know, the assets, physical assets is kind of the key words there. And while, you know, a lot of folks ask us if we'll do pure services businesses, we really shied away given we think the assets provide that barrier entry into the assets that we invest in. All of our opportunities, we need to be able to identify areas that we can help grow as well as prove out the infrastructure characteristics of the business. So often, you know, we're investing behind management teams that have a plan for growth but haven't been able to execute on previously, or new sectors that we think have infrastructure characteristics and we want to be the ones to prove that out to the market. We're often the first institutional capital. All of our companies have strong downside protection, though they may not have been managed for growth in the past, again, given access, an owner's access to capital, or even their ability to execute on certain growth initiatives like M&A, we can certainly help in both those areas. So it's definitely a dynamic business where we can focus on downside protection, but also execute on those private equity strategies to grow the businesses well beyond what they've seen historically.
All right. Well, thanks again, Ben, for joining us. Good summary there and a lot to dig into. So Drew, my friend, over to you. As a partner at Seaport Capital, can you tell us about your firm, what your job entails, and perhaps the types of companies that Seaport invests in? And clearly I understand that IT, communications, and media are your areas of expertise, but certainly feel free to zoom in on your latest priorities as well.
Yeah, appreciate it, Todd. And thanks to you and the BDO team for having us here today. You know, we certainly have appreciated your partnership over the years. Yeah, Seaport's been around for over 25 years now, investing in lower middle market businesses within the sectors you mentioned: tech, communications, media, and business services. Virtually every investment we've made has been founder or family led. As Ben alluded to, we're the first institutional capital that these folks have dealt with. And, you know, we've proven over the years to be good, patient partners to, you know, those types of businesses. For us, the lower middle market, you know, we define it as 3 million of EBITDA all the way up to 15. And for us, you know, that sweet spot tends to be 4 to 8. We've invested at both ends of the spectrum of what we consider lower middle market, but 4 to 8 seems to be a really nice starting point for us. Our focus sectors, coupled with our size parameters, tend to define our areas of interest really well. But, you know, we do layer on some business model characteristics that we typically are looking for. You know, our businesses tend to have highly recurring revenue streams associated with them. In some cases, there are contractually supported reoccurring revenue, and we can get comfortable with that as well. But those are things that we're looking for, along with operating leverage. We like to be able to see businesses that have demonstrable unit economics, and with that, the ability to drive the bottom line with revenue growth. And, you know, that's fundamentally where we've been focused on over the course of our 25 plus years. And all those sectors have their own evolutions, and we've figured out how to continue to play with them over the years. That's kind of Seaport in a nutshell.
Again, Drew, great to have you here. You both really just shared a lot about your current focus areas, but since the sectors you're investing in are different, I do think it's interesting for our listeners to hear from both of you about some of the industry-specific challenges and opportunities you face when sourcing deals. And personally, I'd be really interested to hear about any that really have emerged more recently. Drew, why don't you start us off on this one?
Yeah, happy to dive into that a little bit, Todd. And, you know, given our long history and the focus sectors that we pay attention to, we tend to have pretty well-developed relationships. We do see a lot of the deals that we would want to see. And, you know, I know everyone says it, but often on a proprietary basis. And that's just because of the networks of executives and folks that we've gotten to know over the years. And interestingly, there's always going to be industry specific challenges, but a couple of things that we've been facing of late come from expanded interest in our focus sectors and our size range. You know, on the expanded interest front, we have seen infrastructure funds, and Ben can probably speak to this, really put communications and data infrastructure in their crosshairs. You know, and this has been happening over the course of several years for sure, but it continues to impact us today. And in some cases, it's kind of pushed us out of some of the traditional sectors that we've paid attention to. And we've had to find different ways of playing that. And I think we'll touch on that a little bit in a second. On the size front, it's kind of interesting because, and we've seen this time and time again, when the middle market starts to freeze up a little bit from a deal perspective, whatever the reason might be for that, you know, we tend to start seeing middle market firms move downstream and start fishing in ponds that we typically wouldn't find them in. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you the past, call it 18 months, is we've definitely been dealing with that. And that's a little easier to deal with because, you know, you're just picking your spots at that point and, you know, leaning on your relationships to really understand where it's worth spending time and where it's not. And so we, you know, stick to our knitting, pick our spots, and you know, eventually when the middle market really gets rolling again, their attention will go back to, frankly, where they would prefer to have it, in larger opportunities that, you know, require checks bigger than we're going to write anyways. So, you know, those are really some of the dynamics that we've been having play out recently for us.
Yeah, well, you're certainly not alone. Many of our clients have had to go downstream, but they're looking forward to coming back upstream in early 2025, or so they say. So, Ben, over to you. I guess kind of same question, same topic. What are some industry-specific challenges and opportunities 3i has encountered when it comes to deal origination lately, and how are you choosing to respond?
Yeah, it's a good question. Coming out, I guess I should say, we cover a wide range of industry segments, right? You know, when you look at our portfolio, it's everything from transportation to digital infrastructure that Drew mentioned, to utilities, to energy. You know, so one of the benefits we have is the ability to quickly pivot depending on where we see the best value. And so one example I'd given it, I think it follows on to what Drew said. Coming out of COVID, we saw a number of infrastructure investors move pretty aggressively to back companies building out fiber broadband networks. You know, we have a bunch of fiber investments throughout Europe, and we've got a number of other more services investments on our private equity side. So we've got a lot of in-house knowledge around the sector. You know, so through our research and experience, you know, we saw these opportunities, but we thought that they would probably be more expensive and take longer than expected. You know, things that pencil out on an Excel spreadsheet don't always pencil out in real life. So, you know, having seen that, we really shifted our focus to some other areas, you know, and so in that case, we were able to get a platform deal done in the environmental services sector. You know, I think that proved out pretty smart. So now what we're doing is taking another look at the fiber sector, given that valuations have seemed to back up a bit and some of the risks around the build and deployment are a bit better understood, right? So we see valuations having, you know, probably a bit of a better entry point. So we are spending a lot more time in that space. And I think it's probably, you know, there's probably a good amount of overlap with what Drew has looked at in the past and what we're kind of focused on for the future. You know, on the origination side, we want to be in the market and ensure that business owners, advisors, intermediaries know about it, right? I mean, it's kind of somewhat of a similar playbook. But for us, we want folks to know that we've got the ability to be creative. We can be pretty flexible on deal structure. You know, our mandate is pretty wide in terms of what we can get done. And even the size, you know, we've had good success scaling up smaller businesses. We've had success taking larger businesses and helping them grow. So, you know, having a flexible mandate, I think, has certainly been helpful when the market is moving pretty quickly.
Sure helps to be flexible. So, Drew, I'm going to come back to you to kind of close this topic. Would you say that Seaport Capital has different strategies when it comes to responding to challenges and opportunities that you just discussed?
Ben kind of alluded to it as well. The ability to be flexible and taking the, call it sector knowledge that we've developed and figuring out different ways to play it. And as it relates to kind of these longer term participants in our sectors, meaning the infrastructure folks that have started to pay attention to some of these areas, we've been longtime investors in data infrastructure, going back to data centers and co-location facilities. But in many of those areas, the check size now you need to play is really just kind of outgrown where we are from a fund perspective. And, you know, but we like the industry dynamics and we like the industry trends and in what is kind of underpinning all of that. And so we found different ways to play it. One of the things that we've done is, you know, investing in technician services around the data center, for instance. Many of those businesses have long-term contracts with the data centers they service, which is, you know, as I alluded to, is kind of the, call it the check the box around recurring or contractually reoccurring revenues. We had a business in that space that, you know, we held for a number of years and grew both organically and through acquisition. And ultimately, it you know, was recently acquired by a strategic in the facility services sector. So yeah, we couldn't write checks anymore into actual data centers, but we figured out a way to stay in and around those four walls. We've also, you know, invested in, you know, the businesses that are taking advantage of that infrastructure, folks in the private cloud and hosting space or the public cloud enablement part of the sector, businesses like CyberLink, which is a business that we recently acquired towards the end of last year in a company called Atmosera that we, you know, have that serves clients looking to put their infrastructure into the Azure environment. So for us, it's, if you like the sectors and they continue to have growth characteristics that we think are attractive, we'll figure out different ways to go at it. Even if the check size or asset intensity of those businesses grow beyond, you know, our check writing capability.
Certainly a lot of creativity going along with both your firms. So I think we covered that topic pretty well. So I'd like to next move on to talk about M&A. Deals have been the talk of the town the past couple of weeks, but before we look ahead, I did want to gauge both of your thoughts on what some were calling a quote-unquote deal resurgence in Q3. So I guess it's really a two-part question. And Ben, I'm going to go to you first. Can you talk about what you saw with your portfolios in Q3? And then looking ahead to 2025, there seems to be a lot of anticipation that M&A is going to take off when the new administration takes office. So what are you seeing and hearing? What gives you confidence going into the new year if you do, in fact, have confidence?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly topical. I think, you know, in Q3, even the past year, given we focus on new platform investments and tuck-ins, we were able to stay pretty busy. Obviously, not a lot of deals closing in Q3 from a new platform perspective, right. But we were very busy. I mean, in the last year, we got 8 tuck-ins done. We've got additional tuck-ins under LOI that we're working on. You know, so we feel really good about it. We've been able to stay busy. I think on the new platform activity side, we are focused on that and we see activity seem to be picking up. I think, you know, sellers are getting more comfortable with the current valuation environment. You know, while not the primary avenue for deals for us going through the broker market, you know, I think that's a good indication of what folks are at least thinking. We're certainly getting a lot of deals in the door through that, teasers and whatnot. You know, so there's a lot of people pushing things. We'll see if it actually gets done. I think having the election, being through the election cycle, is certainly helpful. I think people didn't like the uncertainty of what that was going to be, and just knowing what the outcome is, I think certainly gives people optimism. You know, the financing market, they're able to get stuff done there. People have capital. So we'll see. I mean, we're optimistic, but from our perspective, we've got platform companies that we can continue just adding on to. And that really happens irrespective of what the broader market is doing.
Yeah. Well, I know many of our clients have been keeping themselves busy with the add-ons, but I definitely saw a pickup of new platforms, you know, with a bunch of our clients in the last couple of quarters. So Drew, same question to you, kind of your thoughts on the Q3 deal resurgence and then what you're seeing and hearing on the transactions front, and if that gives you confidence going into 2025.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm curious to know the folks that felt like there was a resurgence because, you know, within our four walls, we really didn't see that. Much like Ben had said, we paid a lot of attention to our portfolio companies and creating add-on activity and searching for those opportunities to add value that way. But in terms of just the absolute volume of new deals that we would consider, call it platforms, there wasn't a ton of them, you know. And to be clear, as I said earlier, we tend to pick our spots. And so a real active year for us on the new platform front is going to be, call it 3 new deals. Typically, we're going to get somewhere between 1 and 3 done a year. This year, it looks like it'll probably be one. You know, we closed something in, you know, just a few weeks back, actually, again, kind of finding a different way to play within broadband infrastructure, which fiber to the home is one of those areas that the infrastructure folks have paid attention to and made it more difficult for us to compete there. But we found a different way to go at that. But, you know, I would say that there's probably not a lot that we're looking at in the pipeline right now that I would see closing before year end. So one deal, it's kind of on the low end of our spectrum. Just kind of looking at the environment though, you know, on a forward basis, I do think that there are some catalysts to kind of tell us that it will get more active. A lot of folks were saying that coming into 24, they were looking at pretty robust pipelines on the investment banking side, really felt like things would start to shake loose. But for whatever reason, rising interest rates, et cetera, you know, that really didn't come to fruition, at least from our perspective. But I do believe there is the double-edged sword of folks having sat on investments for a period of time, you know, between having to deal with COVID, having to recover from COVID, to getting into a higher interest rate environment. Things have been held up a bit. And, you know, at some point we've all got a job to do, and that's create liquidity and return money to investors. So I do think that's going to be a bit of a catalyst here in the coming months. And Ben said this as well, and I totally agree. We've seen a lot of businesses circling back to us with more tempered valuation expectations. Either they told us we were not in the right range and moved down with somebody else, but ultimately that party walked away and the deal fell apart, or whatever the reason. We've seen a number of occasions where folks are coming back to us with more realistic valuation expectations. So, you know, I think that's another catalyst for being able to get things done, irrespective of where interest rates end up going. Because I think that picture's gotten a little bit muddier in the past few weeks, not clearer, frankly. So we do, I think, expect 25 to be a little bit more active than what we've seen in 24.
Right. So I think we all joke over the last couple of years, we've all been saying, oh yeah, next quarter is going to be the one. Next quarter is going to be the one.
Right. And,
we'll get your predictions as we close out this episode, but it will be interesting to see. I know personally, our team that focuses on the sell side Q of E's for our PE clients and banker friends, they are full out at this point, running at capacity for deals coming to market in Q1. So I like to think that's a good leading indicator, as informal as it is.
Well, and Todd, hopefully there's not too many adjustments in those EBITDA numbers.
I was thinking the same thing.
Of course not. Can't say. So with ongoing economic shifts impacting valuations, how do each of you think about maximizing valuation for an exit? Are there specific operational improvements or value creation initiatives that you focus on when you're trying to help boost valuations before going to market? Drew, I'll let you go first on this one. What are you thinking? What are you seeing?
Yeah, at Seaport, there really is a framework that we try to leverage to help us drive value into our investments. It's foundation building. We align the organizational structure with the strategy that we've all sat down together and kind of wrapped our heads around. More often than not, that's going to involve defining roles and responsibilities, hiring to build out the team, et cetera. Part and parcel to that strategy development and that organizational structure, we professionalize the sales and marketing function. As I had said, I think every investment we've made has been founder or family led. You know, as a result, as you might imagine, most of those businesses, the sales are led by that founder or family. And, you know, fundamentally, that's just not scalable. So we do a lot of the heavy lifting, professionalizing sales and marketing. And then we're focused on enhancing management tools through better operational and financial reporting. And that's core and fundamental to positioning these businesses to really start going after the growth opportunity that we're underwriting coming into the investment. And more often than not, that is organic growth and some element of acquisition activity. And it's funny, right? I mean, people look at it and say, well, isn't that private equity 101? And, yes, right. 100%. I mean, it is. But that's fundamentally lower middle market investing. We need to do all those steps early in our hold period to really enable these businesses to go realize on outsized growth. And ideally, if we've gone and done our job, you know, we've done it well, we've helped enable these management teams to build enduring businesses. And, you know, they really are kind of, quote, platform ready for that middle market private equity firm that has their playbook that they're going to want to go run. And there's more professionalization within the organization that's going to enable them to frankly, be able to meet those expectations that that next buyer is going to have. And that's true for, you know, the next size private equity firm. And it's also true for many strategics. A lot of strategic buyers don't want to deal with a messy, privately run, family-led business. They don't want to deal with that cleanup, even though it may be an attractive addition to the portfolio of their services. So that's really kind of what we do. Our job is to do that foundational building around these management teams and help them grow their bench and really kind of go after the opportunity that's there.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate all that stuff, Drew. That's excellent. Ben, how about you? How does 3i maximize valuations for an exit in today's really shifting economy?
We haven't really changed how we maximize value for an exit. We've always focused on building great infrastructure businesses, focus on management teams, you know, really want to put in place teams that are ready, willing, and able to stay with the business for the next level of growth. You know, a lot of the things Drew mentioned, we're very focused on as well, right? Getting the right team, getting the right KPIs in place, focusing on capital allocation. You know, those are kind of the building blocks of what we do. You know, we also are trying to build up the infrastructure investment thesis, right? So that could be going through a recontracting cycle, changing the terms of how these companies contract with their customers. You know, that could be increasing tenor, that could be adding inflation escalators. So there's a lot of things that we want to do to further prove out the infrastructure thesis. If we're buying a smaller platform, it could be growing it. It could be growing it through tuck-in acquisitions, you know, where we may have bought, you know, a very small, low-risk core in for a business, but the thesis for us was being able to scale that by tucking in a lot of additional businesses to that, right? And I think of our short line rail platform, where each railroad is kind of a small core infra asset, but they're small. And our value add is growing that by just having a diversified portfolio of smaller contracted railroads. You know, from a deal perspective, you know, one of the things we are considering now is really portability of financing structure. I think that's something that we think is an interesting dynamic to be pushing. You know, if you have that financing in place, it's one less thing that a new investor has to think about, lowers the barrier to entry for them to participate in a sale process, you know, lowers like their out-of-pocket costs and really can help drive a bit more competition in a sale process. And so that's something a bit new, but we do think pretty hard about that these days when we're putting in place our financings.
All right, Ben. Again, both provided a lot of good data points and takeaways for our listeners. So I appreciate those responses. But that brings us to the last topic of our conversation today. Each episode, I typically like to check in with our guests about what's on the horizon. And we historically have called it, let's take a peek into your respective crystal balls. So it's no secret that we're in a time of massive change, both economically and politically. So as we look towards 2025, what are your predictions for private equity in your industries, the middle market, or even just overall? And are there specific challenges or opportunities you foresee for your firms in the coming months and quarters? So Ben, why don't you kick us off on this one?
You got to be optimistic and excited for the coming year. So we certainly are. From my team and 3i's perspective, you know, we've got capital, we've got an experienced team, we've got a great stable of portfolio companies. So we think there'll be opportunity, whether that's on the new platform side or on the tuck-in side. You know, there's always going to be uncertainty in the market. Again, I mentioned it before, but I think getting past the election takes one big unknown off the table. There's certainly others, but there always are. And so we think we'll be able to navigate that. And given timings of investments in people's portfolios and even owners, you know, individual owners, founders and owners, we think 2025 shows a lot of promise. From an infrastructure segment, you know, I think we'll continue to target new industries, continue to expand what we look at, think about new ways of classifying companies within the infrastructure landscape. So we're excited and, you know, I think we'll be busy.
All right. I love the optimism, Ben. Love it. So Drew, why don't you close us out here? What do you anticipate is to come for PE in 2025? And feel free to touch on any challenges Seaport is gearing up to potentially face.
Yeah, I kind of stole my own thunder earlier.
But, yeah,
I would echo Ben. I do think it's going to be a lot more active. We have in the portfolio companies where we're proactively looking for add-ons. We've got full pipelines, robust, I would say, at multiples that we're pretty excited about. So I do think that we're going to have the opportunity to grow some of these businesses inorganically through M&A, and pretty excited about that. You know, again, it was a one platform deal a year for us. We'd like to believe that that activity is going to pick up and hopefully we'll get a few more done in 2025. There certainly seems to be indications of things that are coming down as I've talked to folks on the investment banking side and heard what they have in their pipeline. It certainly sounds like businesses, one, that we would, you know, be really interested in, but two, that have the performance, you know, strength and momentum behind them that you kind of have faith that those processes should come to fruition. You know, we're cautiously optimistic that it's going to be a more active year, and both from an M&A perspective, but also from an organic growth perspective. I think there's signs within, you know, our portfolio companies that augur for maybe even stronger 25s than what they've seen in 24. So that all speaks to very positive momentum and you know, we just need to capitalize on it and go after it.
Awesome, guys. Well, I really appreciate you spending time with me today. I know you're both super busy. So Ben Krause with 3i, Drew Myers with Seaport Capital. We really value the relationships with your firms and my personal relationships with both of you. Thanks again for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. It's been great. And again, you guys, you personally and BDO in general have been a really good partner for us. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, Todd, I couldn't echo that more. Really appreciate all the time and energy you put in the relationship and the work product BDO delivers. So thanks for that. And looking forward to be active together here in 25.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope we get flooded with a bunch of A-plus companies in Q1, right? Awesome.
Right on.
All right. So to our listeners, thanks so much for listening. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been BDO's Private Equity Perspectives.
The views presented by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of their respective firms.
Investment banking products and services within the United States are offered exclusively through BDO Capital Advisors, LLC, a separate legal entity and affiliated company of BDO USA, LLP. a Delaware limited liability partnership, and national professional services firm. For more information, visit bdocap.com. Certain services may not be available to attest clients under the rules and regulations of public accounting. BDO Capital Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC.